morning. May it please the Court, Valerie LaRue here on behalf of the mother, Daniela Sternberg, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
3 minutes, yes ma'am.
I ask the Court to find that the trial court erred in terminating Ms. Sternberg's rights for three reasons. Two go to the Court's best interest analysis. First of these is that the Court did not give weight to the bond between the mother, Ms. Sternberg, and her child, Dinas.
I don't want to interrupt your flow too much, but my understanding of the record is that this was not a termination for abuse under B1 or B2. It was a termination exclusively under C2, although the court found that the reason that the child was in foster care services initially was physical abuse.
That's correct, Your Honor. The second reason is that the court did not compare the low likelihood of adoption to the stronger likelihood that Ms. Sternberg would be able to resume her parenting duties. And, of course, the best interest analysis mainly go, in terms of the court's decision, to the foster care plan goal of adoption.
Regarding physical abuse or any type of abuse, in the time period after the child was placed in foster care, did the department offer any evidence of any type of physical, mental, or emotional abuse?
No, Your Honor. I think that the department's witnesses were actually asked that question, which I think is on page 181 of the appendix, whether they observed any ongoing abuse, threat of abuse, or inappropriate use of force, and their answer was no.
Were there any services that she was offered specific to physical abuse that she did not complete?
No. And the third reason goes to Judge Russell is getting to, which is that the court was wrong as a matter of law in regarding the remedying of the conditions that brought DS into care. The court disregarded the evidence, which clearly showed that Ms. Sternberg did remedy the conditions that brought DS into care, and that the department had no further concerns regarding abuse. To go back to the bond between the parent and child, the court must have respect for the natural bond between children and their parents, and the court didn't give any weight to that bond. That bond was testified to by the department's witnesses, and it was clear from the evidence, for instance, the fact that DS didn't want to leave his mother when they were at the end of visits, that he was excited to see her. So the bond was well established. I think one of the witnesses testified that there was a strong attachment between the mother and her son. And the court ignored that evidence.
The report, I think it's at page 18 and 19 of the joint appendix, that going into the September 16, 2016 court hearing, the department's recommendation in the report is return the child to the custody of the mother.
That's
because
right.
Of progress she had made. What evidence was there of any type of worry, concern, anything related to the physical abuse that the trial court relied on in the end between September of 2016 that could have changed the department's position?
Your Honor, my recollection of the evidence was that it wasn't related to concerns about abuse, but some things that she hadn't finished, such as a budget.
But the trial court specifically and expressly discounted all of that as a reason to terminate the relationship.
That's true. And I think if you read the record and read the court's opinion that was delivered from the bench, was that his main concern was that she hadn't acknowledged the precipitating abuse until that hearing. And my argument as to that is that because the court has to consider the child's present best interests, it doesn't matter when she came to that acknowledgement of fault. What matters is that she did come to it. And Ms. Sternberg is, as I think is pretty clear in the record, was not very highly educated, had been in foster care herself, had been a victim of abuse herself. And I think we all struggle with culpability and when to admit fault. And for someone with her low level of sophistication, I'm not sure that we should expect her to be able to weigh the consequences of admitting fault, which could redound on her as well, versus the benefits of admitting fault. I think that the work that she did post the juvenile court hearing, to go to counseling, to take another parenting class that was more suited to her learning style, enabled her to come to that understanding that, in fact, she was at fault, and she was able to articulate that at this termination hearing.
Regarding services related to the question of physical abuse, the mental health, it seems to me, and maybe there's something else, and this question will get asked more to both sides, that the main service that she was provided to deal with that issue would have been the mental health counseling, that although she indicated she didn't think she needed it, the department required her to go through. And all the evidence I saw was she did everything the department asked regarding that, and all of the therapists released her as having successfully completed all of that.
Your Honor is correct. So as to my second reason, as far as the best interest analysis, the evidence was that only about a third of children on the adoption waiting list are adopted. A large number of children age out of foster care without ever finding permanency. So in determining the best interest of the child, the court needed to weigh the likelihood of adoption versus the likelihood that Ms. Sternberg would become an appropriate mother. And given her compliance with all the requirements, given the lack of further abuse, I think all the weight was on the mother becoming an appropriate permanency option versus adoption. And Virginia's statutory scheme is designed to achieve permanency. So if the court, in finding best interest of the child, was trying to achieve permanency for DS, the mother was the more likely permanency option for DS. As far as remedying substantially the conditions, the evidence was clear that Ms. Sternberg made marked progress during the 12 months. That was in one of the foster care reports, and I think that's in the appendix at page 17. But the witnesses also testified at trial that she had made substantial progress, and that's in the appendix at 197 and at 218 and other places as well.
The statute references what caused the child to go into foster care or the continuation of foster care. It appeared that the trial court said the only thing that was driving the decision was his determination that what caused her to go into foster, caused DS to go into foster care. There are too many DSs. There's DSS and then yes. Mother and the child are DS. That caused the child to go into foster care was physical abuse. Was there ever any other finding by any adjudicative body that foster care needed to continue because of something other than physical abuse?
I think there were issues that Ms. Sternberg had. She was homeless at the time when and I think living with a family at the time. But the department did help her to get Section 8 housing, which she was able to maintain. She was able to get jobs. It's true that she had struggled with keeping them, but she was able to. And she actually, by the time of the circuit court hearing, had moved to a higher level job with a higher level of pay so that she could provide for her child. And I think the main concerns of the department had to do with the fact that she didn't know how to parent, and they really had to teach her how to parent. She hadn't had been parented herself, having been in foster care, so I think that was the main thing. But I think the DSS was also concerned about her, again, her low level of sophistication. That's why they asked her to do a budget. She wasn't really able to do a budget. I think the record showed that her pastor helped her do her budget. So those are the concerns they had, but they didn't have concerns about her abuse or neglect of her child.
DSS put on essentially a parenting skills case, and the court said that didn't matter to it and discounted it and went on an abuse case, and DSS did not put on evidence of an abuse, of a continuing threat of abuse case.
Yes.
Is that fair?
That is exactly correct. Thank you, Your Honor. So I asked this court to find that termination of Ms. Sternberg's rights was not appropriate in this instance. The Thatch case says that it needs to be the only reasonable and appropriate recourse, and that was not the case here. The terminating a parent's rights shouldn't be an exercise in punishing the parent for not having been a good parent or for not having completed a certain number of tasks on a specific timeline. Given the existing bond, the improvements that she made and continued to make, her commitment to continuing to fix the conditions that brought her child into care by continuing on her own to go to counseling and to go to a parenting class after the juvenile court termination show that she was committed and that her improvement was on an upward trajectory. At the time of the juvenile hearing, the juvenile court, I think, expected to return her child to her. And in fact, if you look in the appendix, you'll note that the juvenile court's order of December of 2016 was amended in April of 2017 because the juvenile court had initially filled out all the boxes for DS to be returned to his mother and had to white out in order because the department changed their mind at that hearing. So rather than her child being returned to her at that hearing, which was what had been originally been anticipated, they asked the court at that hearing to change their goal. So I asked this court to overturn the termination of Ms. Sternberg's rights and the foster care plan of adoption. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Beer.
May it please the court. I want to start by thanking this court for accommodating the schedule of Fauquier County Juvenile Court. It would have been a difficult day there.
We're glad to have been able to make the accommodation.
We appreciate that. Also, I believe you've been made aware that the guardian ad litem just given birth to a baby boy and was not able to be here. I think made an appearance by letter or email.
Yes.
I'm anticipating a number of questions at this point. Let me just summarize.
You can pretty much assume everything I just asked her, I'm going to ask you.
So let me say that I think my brief clearly states that this is a standard of review case. Is this an abuse of discretion? I also cited the rule this court has articulated as right result for the wrong reason. The Supreme Court has said maybe we should call that the right result for a different reason. So
do you agree that the evidence did not support a failure to address the abuse allegation? Do you agree with the characterization that y'all put on a parenting skills case?
We put on a parenting skills case. The judge appeared to talk about physical abuse. I do note. Again, in regards to her substantial progress and her parenting capacity, the court did note, after observing her on the witness stand and watching her testify, that, and I cited it in my brief at page 8, mother never took any responsibility or had any insight into the effect of that abuse on her child.
Until today.
Until the date of the trial. And again, that was a trial on appeal the second time around. But he watched her, he observed her testimony, and made his way to credibility.
Right, and he can. And assuming that he finds that testimony not worth considering, which is clearly the fact finder's role, given that you still have the burden of proof, does erasing that testimony provide clear and convincing evidence to the contrary? Or does it just take us down to zero?
Well, I don't think it takes us down to zero. As you've noticed, and I'm not going to... The case we presented was continuing to remain in foster care. And you asked if there was some adjudication at any point in the process. And there was in the juvenile court, based on mother's... and this is in the change of goal in the juvenile court from return home to adoption. That I don't remember the date of that order. This case went on for a long time. But at a certain point, the juvenile court said, I can't change the goal of adoption based on the mother's having hit what I'll call a plateau in her improvement. And the testimony and the evidence from the service providers that, while mom was able to learn certain concrete tasks, she was not able to adapt to new and unencountered situations.
Well, counsel, let me ask you a question about that improvement, because it seems in January of 2016, Family Solutions terminated the parenting skills. And it wasn't until September where the juvenile court indicated it should be re-implemented that it was done. Doesn't that really impact the time frame in which she had to actually cure or remedy this if we're looking at just the parenting skills part? For sort of the right result, wrong reason?
I'm trying to remember that the timeline, January to September. Let me check.
Well, just assume for purposes of the question that that's an accurate time frame.
That's an accurate time frame. Does that impact it? I suppose it may. The
Well, it would certainly be something that the trier of fact could take into consideration.
Certainly, could take that into consideration.
And here we don't have any findings of fact from the trier of fact regarding terminating based on a lack of progress in parenting skills.
That's true.
Given that we don't have findings of fact on that issue, and findings of fact, right result, wrong reason, requires there to be no factual dispute to be resolved, would you concede without any factual findings that they disputed that her parenting skills weren't appropriate, that was at issue?
I'm sorry, would you restate the question?
Right result, wrong reason requires that there is no additional fact finding that needs to be done to reach to have the necessary predicates in place to reach the alternate conclusion, the one that you're asking us to reach. It seems to me that whether her parenting skills had progressed sufficiently wasn't actively in dispute.
It was actively in dispute.
And the trial court made no findings regarding parenting skills because it just jumped. That's an accurate
characterization.
So definitionally, there are no factual findings that could support the alternative reason of parenting skills on this record.
There are no findings made by the trial court.
And
we
so,
believe there is evidence in the record.
Well, right, but that would require us to make a factual finding, which we're not allowed to do. Correct? We could pick her version, we could pick your version, but we're not allowed to pick either version. Somebody else has to do that.
The way, I understand the question. I'm trying to articulate a reasoned response. Inherent in the right result, wrong reason test is that I think the Supreme Court, in the case I cited, said we don't judge rationale, we judge results. So inherent in that is the fact that the trial court did not articulate the correct line of reasoning.
Right.
The question we have to ask is, assuming that he did articulate the right result, is there evidence to support it?
Well, what the Perry case says about right result, wrong reason is, it's not available to us unless all the underlying factual findings that would be necessary to support the reason that the trial court did not use have been made. Not that there's evidence, but they have to have been either made or the issue has to not be in dispute. And so I'm asking you, short of us finding that the evidence is sufficient, that the parenting skills aren't good enough, there is no finding below that that's the case.
There is no finding below that that's the case.
And it was disputed.
And it was disputed.
Okay.
We're limited to the record here, obviously.
Yes.
But I can't help but ask you, it seems to be such a disconnect here. Is there something more to the story that is not apparent in the record?
No. The record accurately reflects the proceedings.
It's an unusual case.
It is an unusual case. It had an unusual history. There was, what you saw is mom dug in. She did what she was asked to do. There's no dispute about that from any of the witnesses. She did what she was asked to do. At some point, it was felt she made sufficient progress that she didn't need certain interventions. At a later point in the proceedings, the trial court, the juvenile court, said, you know what, this isn't going well. The visitations were still exhibiting problems. Maybe we didn't do enough. And reinstituted the services. And the sense was simply that this wasn't going to get better, that we needed to resolve some permanency. When I first started 100 years ago, we didn't have that 12-month rule, and we'd work foster care for years. But we can't do that anymore, and the decision was made. We don't see that this is really going to get better no matter what we do. And so I think that's implicit in the record, but that's the best way I can answer your question. Thank you.
At least two more, but I think only two more. On the any she successfully completed, and there's no dispute, any services she was given related to that were designed to prevent further abuse. Is that an accurate statement of the record?
Yes, except I think there was some question about whether she needed to continue in counseling or not. And she's,
well, all I saw on that, and it's kind of like the Michigan records that are relied on that aren't in the record, and so you're kind of relying on a DSS summary of that. It was that she said she had been released by the therapist, and I saw nothing in the record that contradicted that, and I, given it's your burden of proof ultimately, I assume that if there was some way to counteract that or not prove, I mean, is the only thing in the record that regarding why she stopped therapy was she was released by the therapist?
To the best of my recollection.
Okay. Then the other question that added to some of the unusualness here is, I just want to make sure I understand what happened with the guardian ad litem back in the trial court, not why she's not here today. There was a guardian ad litem appointed by the court to review, to represent the child's interests. She came to an opinion without all of the information by definition because she did not have the trial testimony and so didn't know new things. For some reason, which I hope you can explain to me, she was not present at the trial and without an order of substitution or anything like that, sent somebody in her stead. And then that person was allowed to testify, although the judge said he didn't know how much weight he was going to give it. And that person gave their best guess about what the new information that came out at trial would have done to the guardian ad litem's opinion regarding the child.
I recall that. I do not know why that happened. It was not something over which...
I know it's not the department's issue. I'm just trying to make sure I understand. I wonder if perhaps stuff like that is why this is unusual.
It is frustrating in Spotsylvania County particularly that we tend to have guardians ad litem in and out and covering for each other. And I don't think that is not the best practice. I can't.
Is it even permissible given that there's no court-ordered substitution?
That's a good question. Probably not.
I
don't want to testify here. I think there was a notice issue, a scheduling issue, perhaps that caused a calendar conflict. But I can't tell you for a fact, and it's not in the record why that happened.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that I. Regardless of why it happened, I wanted to make sure I understood what happened because it struck me as unusual.
And it is unusual, and I really can't answer you any more than that.
I appreciate your candor. I understand where you are.
And I don't have anything else to say.
Very well. Thank you very much. Rebuttal?
Thank you. Your Honors, this case is one in which a pinch in the arm became a termination of rights for a mother who worked really hard to get her child back. The court's decision was plainly wrong because the court disregarded the weight of the evidence, which showed that Ms. Sternberg was able to resume parenting. The burden for the department is high, clear, and convincing as far as the termination, and they did not meet that burden. As to the department's argument that she cannot generalize her skills to new and unfamiliar situations, that was not the basis of the trial court's decision. In any case, her testimony about the bathtub hypothetical situation, I think, goes to her ability to generalize what she'd learned to a new situation. The balance of the weight of the evidence was not on terminating. The witnesses had no further concerns about continuing abuse. She had learned safety precautions and considerations. She had learned how to appropriately regulate her child's behavior. She had learned how to provide nutritious meals and to deal with misbehavior in a positive and non-abusive way. She is able to provide an appropriate home. She has a job. She is able to articulate her understanding of appropriate discipline and to meet her child's emotional needs. The trajectory of Ms. Sternberg's improvements, including those she made on her own after the juvenile court termination, show that she is committed to being a good parent, and she does have capacity to place herself in future situations. So I ask this honorable court to please overturn the trial court's decision as to both termination and the foster care plan of adoption.
If we were to reverse, is it just reverse and remand with instructions to for further proceedings consistent with his opinion? Because the department did, they did put on a parenting skills case, but the court didn't rule on a parenting skills case. What's the end? If you win here, what's the next step? What are you entitled to, and what would you want? And please recognize those may not be the same thing.
Yes, Your Honor. So of course, what I would want would be for the court to simply overturn the court's decision and perhaps remand to further proceedings as far as when the custody of DS would be transferred from DSS to Ms. Sternberg. But I do understand that the court, in feeling that the trial court, if the court finds that the trial court erred, may decide that it needs to be remanded for a new trial, in which case.
The same thing I said to him, that we can't make factual findings that the trial court made, that also means we can't do it in your favor either. So
I understand.
Are there sufficient factual findings in this record to award her? I don't see how any way the order could. Is there any way on this record that there are factual findings that we could enter final judgment and award her custody? I can't see how we could do that. But if you've got a way, I'll listen to you.
Your Honor, I cannot answer that question. I do not know the answer to that.
Okay.
I wish I did.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. In keeping with our tradition, we will step down and greet counsel, and that concludes this docket, and so the court will thereafter stand in recess.